The Cheese Shop presents The Butter Factor from the Radio Theatre in London.
I'm Jerry O'Junkett. Welcome to In Your Dreams. That's right, In Your Dreams, the show that makes your dreams come true. For me! This week we received a letter from the father of 7-year-old Rebecca, who suffers from a very rare illness. He wrote,
"Dear Jerry, our daughter is such a brave little soldier, and her dream is to spend a week at Disneyland in Florida."
Well, we got in touch with the people at Disneyland, and they thought it was a wonderful idea. So that's exactly where I went, and I had a brilliant time. It was a great crack. Congratulations, Rebecca. That's all for now. See you later on In Your Dreams.
Earnest recollections of the Great Exhibition. Crystal Palace, 1851. A most wondrous sight to gladden the heart of every Englishman. The jewels of an empire on show to the world. I, John Adams, had travelled to the exhibition with a group from my Sunday school. I marvelled to see ambassadors of every land, wide-eyed and open-mouthed, pass by the exhibits, pausing only briefly on their tour to smash my kneecaps with a hammer. The Reverend Packard had thoughtfully tied me tightly to a post so that I would not wander off and get lost. The hammer was, I believe, an afterthought. But once he had himself set to on my kneecaps with a religious fervour, it soon became a popular attraction, if not one intentioned by the original planners. That was the last time I, John Adams, had occasion to visit Crystal Palace.
Watcher, is this where you publish the innovations catalogue?
Yes, it is, yes.
I'm Professor Cash, inventor.
And here is my idea.
Actually, we only print the catalogue.
Shut up and listen.
Jacuzzis.
Jacuzzis.
Those little bubbling baths. Brilliant, right?
Oh, very relaxing, yes. But we don't actually...
But you only get them in big posh houses, because they're so expensive. What about if every home could have a cheap one? In their kitchen. Blueprint. Some of the felt tip has run. It got wet in my shed. I mean, laboratory. Look, home jacuzzi kit. Just get a saucepan big enough to sit in, pop it on your cooker, heat for half an hour, and viola! Lovely, relaxing bubbles.
You've tried this, have you?
Well, I couldn't fit in the prototype. It's only really big enough for soup. But with your backing, we can make a big one. Thousands of big ones. Knock them out at, say, $29.99.
Look, we can't actually help with you. Anyway, you can't immerse a human in boiling water.
Look inside that word can't. You'll find can.
Yeah, well, what about the tea?
Lovely, 9 sugars, please.
Oh.
But that can wait. You and me, reception.
Look, I'm sorry, we can't help you. Would you mind leaving the bill?
It starts with a small advert. A lady stepping into one of our jacuzzis.
Look, would
She'll have to wear a swimsuit in case kiddies are reading it.
No.
And before you know, every home has a lovely, affordable jacuzzi in the kitchen.
Look, I'm going to
We are rich men.
Excuse
but
me.
Then some idiots start overfilling them. Didn't read the instructions.
What are you talking
about? No, listen. Maybe they live in a block of flats, the way to the water cracks the ceiling, and then they drench the little old lady living below.
Yes, okay,
poor thing.
But should you mind...
You tell me you've checked the paperwork and we're not responsible.
Okay.
But you didn't check it, did you? No, you were too busy entertaining top models in your jacuzzi with champagne.
What are
Why
you...
Why did I agree to go into business with you? All the clues were there. No cup of tea like you offered.
What are you
Reception?
Talking...
Reception? I mean, what sort of name is that? Like Madonna or Ronaldo, are you?
Would you please...
We're ruined because of your playboy lifestyle.
Would you
Well,
need...
I'm not having it. You toilet. You shower. You sink. It's pot night here on Radio 4. Next up, a special programme looking ever so carefully at the plant Cannabis sativa.
All right, illegal green thumbers. I'm Jack Finsborough, and welcome to a special edition of my gardening phone-in. Who's my first caller?
It's Mr. Smith.
Oh, lovely. Now then, Mr. Smith, what's your question?
Well, I've been growing millions of marijuana plants in my granny's cellar for years. Recently, though, I've been trying to crossbreed several different strains, but I can never get them to grow more than a couple of inches before they go all sticky and die. What am I doing wrong?
I see. Well, it seems to me that by attempting to meddle with nature, you've allowed your plants to be possessed by demons.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I've seen them.
I knew it.
I thought they were just hallucinations.
No, no, my friend. They are very real.
Oh, my God, what can I do?
You must burn all your plants without delay. Burn them all with lovely, purifying flames.
But I did that, Mr. Finsburn. That's when I saw the demons.
What?
Huge, big, sticky demons.
Hey?
Demons as big as a house with great big yellow eyes and grinny mouths and horns.
What?
Oh, the horns, the grinny mouths and the sticky horns. They're sticky and wet, some of them, and the face of my granny with thin, bony old lady arms.
Now, you listen.
And they whisper, oh, they whisper violent, terrible things. Whispering, 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 whispering. So I burn them, like you said, with fire. Lovely fire.
Hey, stop that.
And they whisper, but the old lady's arms won't burn because they're sticky and wet. Sticky! Sticky! Sticky!
Hey, no, you listen here, Mr. Smith. Chickering, Nora. Not even Gas Mark 12 is going to get rid of these denizens of hell. What you need is napalm. Buckets and buckets of napalm. Obliterate the demons from the face of the earth in a conflagration hotter than the depths of hell itself. An almighty blaze to dazzle the entire universe. Then slash them with a chainsaw! Slash, slash, slash while they sizzle! That should see you right.
What if I were to bake them in cakes?
No. Napalm or nothing. Well, that's all we have time for. Till next time, illegal green thumbers, stay warm.
Hello?
Hello, sorry to bother you. Are you the senior member of the household?
It's my house, yeah.
And do you have a telephone with answering machine in your house?
Yes, I do. Are you selling something?
Well, sort of. I'm a trained actor, and I've started selling this thing door to door. What's your name, sir?
Ben.
Benjamin cannot come to the phone at present. Please speak clearly after the tone.
Howdy. Benny can't take this call right now. Would y'all leave a message?
Oh, the bells, they fall on deaf ears. As Ben, alas, he is not here. Oh, that you had called an hour ago. But no. Speak.
That's really good. Can you do Geordie?
Oh, no.
What about, could you do me?
Well, I'll try.
How about that?
Any good?
Yeah, that's really good, yeah. So, could you do one for me, as me?
All right, like this.
This is Ben. Leave a message after the beep.
There you go.
That's really good. That's exactly what I want. Actually, that's exactly what I've already got. Thanks, bye.
Curses! Curse him! Blow, winds, and crack your cheeks! Rage! Blow! You cataracts and hurricanoes!
Get off the lawn!
Right, sorry.
I'm Jerry O'Junkin. Welcome back to Holiday of a Lifetime. Morris, you've done ever so well in the Eliminator, but you have to answer one more question to win the all-expenses-paid trip around the world for two. It's a fantastic prize, Morris. The tickets are right here in my pocket. Are you feeling nervous?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, I am too, because if you don't get this right, I'll be going instead of you. Twice.
Hey? What?
I won't wish you luck, because that would be hypocritical. And please, no helping from the studio audience at this point. Just keep your mouth shut, all right? Morris, for the Holiday of a Lifetime, the question is... Too easy, we'll take another one.
Hey?
Okay, here we go. And... And you can interrupt at any time. Now, what is the capital... Do you want to interrupt?
No.
Coward. What is the capital of... Venezuela? No, you're out of time! Oh. Unlucky, Morris. I'm off around the world. Tune in next week when somebody else will be presenting Holiday of a Lifetime.
Can Ruby sing a songwriter?
Hi, I'm Ted Ruby.
You know, people often say to me, Ted, you got talent. Why don't you give a little back to the people? Write a song with a meaningful message that everyone can learn from, with all the profits going to a charity of your choice. It's either that or a custodial sentence. Hey, I don't need asking twice, so I decided to make that the subject of this week's masterclass. How to write a song that could change people's lives. Feed the world. Rule number one, famine, it's old hat. But I say, you can't go wrong singing about how war is a bad thing. What can we do about the turmoil in Iraq? Perhaps this tune'll make 'em give us the bombs we sold 'em back. Oh, I think that war is wrong. If you agree, then buy my song. You see, a bit of politics followed by the message works every time. You gotta make people think that if they don't buy your song, they're in some way directly contributing to the deaths of innocent people. If war isn't appropriate, natural disaster is always a good bet, but make sure you wring every last ounce of emotion out of the situation. Personalize it. Use real names of real people so that your listeners feel their pain. I want to tell you all the tale about a little lad who's called Alfredo. His mom and dad, his cat, his dog, and bike all got sucked up by a tornado. Typhoon, the wind, it howls and it blows. Typhoon, where's my house? There it goes. Tell me you haven't got tears streaming down your cheeks when you hear that. I mean, I got a lump in my throat just thinking about that kid. Which reminds me, steer clear of songs about terminal illnesses. Of course, the easy option is to sing about some half-assed environmental issue. If there's one thing that's guaranteed to make my blood boil, it's 15,000 seagulls up to their necks in crude oil. Should we continue to plunder the earth for fuel till she breathes her last breath? Well, I say yes, oil's a useful resource. Without it, we'd all freeze to death. Politics. I never said it was easy. The most important thing to do when you've written your song is publicly donate the royalties to a high-profile charity, privately pocket an enormous session fee, and promptly get the hell out of town. None of this is true. I'm Ted Ruby. Good night.
Well, this is a surprise. We were wondering when you were going to come and visit your father.
Yes, sorry, Doctor. My wife has just had a baby.
Now, that would have been nice. Now, I should warn you, your father is partially blind and very confused. He may not know who you are. Mr. Sanders, you've got a visitor. Your son, Martin. He's come all the way from Dublin.
Hello, Dad. It's Martin here. It's Martin, Dad. Martin. Dad, it's Martin here. You remember Martin, don't you, Dad?
Try saying it in an Irish accent.
What?
Just a hunch.
Hello, Dad, it's Martin here.
Not so much Ian Paisley, more Jerry O'Junkett.
Oh, hello, Dad, it's Martin here.
No, like this. Hello, Dad, it's Martin here.
Oh, hello, Martin. Thanks for coming again.
Oh, to be sure, this is the first time I've come, Father.
But you come every day.
No, you're very confused. Well, it's lovely to be seeing you, Father. I'd better be going.
Oh, goodbye, Martin. Give my love to Peter.
I will do. Goodbye, Father. There you go, copy that accent, you'll be fine.
All right, what's going on?
He was lonely. He told us you live in Dublin. I thought you might have an Irish accent.
And who's Peter?
Peter's your boyfriend.
I'm married!
Divorced. He asked how you all were. It was the first thing that came into my head.
This is outrageous!
Well, that's what your father thought. He removed you from his will when he heard the news.
Oh.
But don't worry, he's now beginning to accept Peter as your chosen partner. He's even allowed him to visit a couple of times. Now, Peter's a sort of excited Glaswegian. Think of Kenny Dalglish with a mouthful of hot chips.
Right, I'm taking my father home with me.
Well, you're going to need to brush up on your voices. Other characters you'll be doing are Vladimir, the 3-year-old Romanian orphan you recently adopted. He likes being tickled. Professor Stephen Hawking, who's a regular visitor. And a stray poodle called...
Dad, this is Martin.
He doesn't know who you are.
Hello, Father, this is Martin here.
Oh, hello, Martin.
How would you like to come back to Dublin with me?
Oh, no, I couldn't. Peter wouldn't want me cluttering up the place, would he?
Can he down leash with Chips?
Peter's right here, Father.
Oh, hi, you're all right, Mr. Sanders. Oh, I'd love to have you live in our wee gay house.
Oh, hello, Peter. Hello, Peter, that's very nice of you. Oh, where's Vladimir?
Yes, where is Vladimir, your Romanian orphan?
He's over here with you, isn't he, Doctor?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, no, he's here with me.
Hello, Granddaddy.
He's 3 years old.
Oh. Hey, old Granddaddy.
Oh, Vladimir, come here and let me tickle you. Oh, he's grown, hasn't he?
Well, that's enough fun and games. Are you coming with us, Father?
Oh, I don't know. What do you think I should do, eh, Molly?
Oh, God,
go with your son, Reggie, and put him back in your will. Goodbye forever, I love you.
My God, Molly, you can talk.
What?
Molly's the poodle. Luff! 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 That's better. I thought I was going mad for a minute there.
Well, half-time, Colin, and the referee's killing the game as a spectacle.
Well, that's right, Brian. You know, he's blowing for everything. He's not allowing the game to flow, and frankly, he's made some appalling decisions.
So, the referee's killing the game. He's made some appalling decisions out there, hasn't he?
Well, that's right, Brian. You know, he's made some appalling decisions for a top-class ref. In fact, he's killing the game as a spectacle.
He's not allowing the game to flow, is he, Colin, the referee?
Well, that's right, Brian. You know, he's blowing for everything and he's made some, well, frankly, appalling decisions.
So, the ref's had a bad first half then. Hopefully, he'll improve in the second half. What are your thoughts about that second half and that referee?
Well, hopefully he'll improve, you know. Actually, you may have noticed me whittling away on a block of wood towards half-time, Brian.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Certainly doesn't look much like one of those half-time poems you've been surprising us with recently.
No, well, I decided that if I was going to properly represent the atrocities being committed against the game of football by this referee, then words were not going to be my medium.
Yeah, and briefly, for you at home, what we've got here is a tiny statue, isn't it, Colin?
Well, it's more than just a tiny statue. It's a sculpture in wood and aluminium.
Whatever it is, it's live and exclusive on this channel. And it's got a whistle.
Yet, with respect, Brian, I think what's important are the brutal chisel strokes which have imposed themselves on the wood in the same way that the referee has imposed himself on the game.
Oh, it's supposed to be the ref.
Well, it's a distortion of the ref.
Yeah, you're telling me.
Look, Brian, I thought you understood my work on this programme.
Oh, I do, Colin. Well, sort of followed a few of your poems, anyway. On the subject of which, join us after the break when Jermaine Greer and I will be discussing Brian's first anthology of interval poetry, entitled Half-Time Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit. And, of course, we'll have the whole of the second half live as well, back after this.
And now on Radio 4, continuing the season of programmes to mark the 50th anniversary of the death of the great Spinoza, a special edition of Chronicles.
Roll up, roll up! Witness the great Spinoza's world-famous rifle trick!
The great Spinoza, Hungarian orthodontist turned escapologist and man of mystery. He thrilled audiences the world over at carnivals, country fairs and women's institutes with his unique brand of daredevilry. His biographer, Charlie Farley, remembers.
Well, Spinoza would think of something terribly dangerous to do, and then the next day he'd just do it in front of 1,000 people. It was completely unrehearsed, there was no trick involved, and he was either perfectly all right or critically ill. I'll tell you what, the ladies loved it.
Roll up, roll up! The great Spinoza stares death in the face once again as he wrestles a leopard, blindfolded. Stretcher!
Little is known about Spinoza the man, only that when he said, for one night only, he really meant it. Charlie Farley again.
He was a very stupid man. And he was lucky too. During the Great War, some nurses were sent to tend the wounded in his trench, so Spinoza decides to walk along the Western Front on stilts. Now, I don't know whether he meant to follow it up by getting shot and falling onto his bayonet, but he certainly did.
All that's left now are some amateurish recordings of early performances and a bag full of pensioners' fanciful memories.
I saw him jump from a high diving board onto a trampoline at the bottom of an empty swimming pool whilst caked in concrete.
Yeah, I saw that one and all. He went straight through the trampoline like a giant stone and cracked his head on the bottom, but he was fine.
Yeah, then he picked himself up and tried to get off with my missus.
Yeah, and mine, yeah.
After an extraordinary career spanning 60 years, the great Spinoza finally succumbed to the icy hand of death on October the 26th, 1949. Ironically, taken from this world because of a relatively mild head cold. He was 78 and a virgin.
The island of Tuamotu in French Polynesia has today been coming to terms with the total destruction of its economic and social infrastructure. Last night, the Napoleon III volcano exploded and covered almost the entire island with a thick layer of ash. It's being described as one of the biggest natural disasters of the 20th century. Our man Henry Payne flew in with the Red Cross and can speak to us now. Henry, what's it like there?
Boiling, mate. I'm having a great time.
Right.
I'll tell you, I'm glad I bought me sunblock.
Yep. And how are the local people bearing up?
Well, I reckon they're used to it. They've been here years.
Yeah, not the sun, Henry, the devastation. How are they coping with the devastation?
Oh, right. Well, not good, mate. I mean, most of the buildings are gone. All the crops have been destroyed. I don't think we'll know the full extent of the damage for a few days yet. But as I say, the sun's out, so it's not a complete disaster.
Yeah, well, it sounds pretty grim. Look, how is the aid effort going?
Well, they've fed and housed the people, but the tricky bit is going to be to decide what to do about the economy, because they're really starting from scratch here.
Yes, I see.
Actually, I've had a few ideas about that myself.
Well, listen, you just keep them to yourself, Henry Payne. You're there to report, not to interfere.
Maybe I ought to have a word with someone.
Yeah, maybe you oughtn't, Henry.
Yeah, I reckon I could have this whole problem sorted out in a week and get a good tan while I'm doing it. I'll call you back.
Yeah, no. Henry Payne there, browning himself on the devastated beaches of French Polynesia. Here's the weather.
I'm Jerry O'Junkett. Welcome back to Here's a Shot That'll Nearly Kill You. This is Albert. He's 93 years old. He has no idea what's about to happen, have you, Albert?
No. But I'm pretty sure it involves you going off on holiday somewhere.
Oh, Albert, you're a charming old cynic. What a character, ladies and gentlemen. Now, 92 years ago, a freak gust of wind separated you from your twin brother Graham, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Albert, we've tracked him down.
No.
Yes, we've tracked him down to Sydney, Australia, where he's been living for the past 92 years.
I don't believe it.
Albert, outside the studio, there's a limousine waiting with its engine running.
Oh, is there?
Albert, inside the car is a first-class ticket to Sydney, Australia, valid on flight BA252, leaving in 1 hour's time.
Oh.
Now, presumably, you've got your passport with you.
No.
Well, here's a shock that'll nearly kill you. I've got mine right here. Albert, it's been a pleasure. I'll be sure to say hello to your brother if I see him, though I doubt it. Tune in next week when it could be your long-lost twin brother I'm visiting, provided he doesn't live in Britain.
We've finally managed to re-establish contact with our man Henry Payne on the devastated island of Tuamotu. How are things coming on there, Henry?
Fantastic, mate. Everything's going to be fine.
Good. Well, I take it they didn't listen to your suggestions then.
Nah, they put me in charge.
All right, let's hear it. What have you done?
Well, I was looking around at all the destruction, the homeless families, the ruined businessmen. I kept thinking to myself, I could really do with a cocktail.
A cocktail?
Yeah, you know, a strawberry daiquiri or something. Anyway, then it occurred to me, they're starting from scratch here. What about building the entire economy around the production of great cocktails? You know, grow junipers for gin, rye for vodka and Jack Daniels. God knows what they put in tequila, but get some of that and all. Then lemon-lime trees, glacier cherry trees, factories to make the little umbrellas and shakers. Anyway, everyone thought that was a cracking idea, so we're up and running.
They agreed?
Yeah, well, we had a tequila slammers party. They saw the light after about 15.
But Henry, for God's sake, what are the people going to eat?
Look, if this works, it's going to be the one place in the world where people come for really good cocktails. The economy will boom. Everyone will be so loaded they can phone out for pizza.
And what if it doesn't work?
Well, I suppose there'll be a load of glacier cherries going spare. Incidentally, did you know there's no duty-free on Red Cross aeroplanes? No wonder the world's in the state it is.
Henry Payne, if you were to spend 20 years living inside a red-hot kiln, you couldn't be more fired than you are now.
I'm Alan Freeby. Welcome to Secret People. It was a year ago today that the late Jerry O'Junkett died. Some would say, inevitably, in a plane crash. But was he just a lovable Irishman with the gift of the gab? Or were there dark secrets behind that showbiz smile? Why all the trips abroad? Was he up to something? Or did he just have a keen eye for a free holiday? The answer may lie here, on this idyllic secluded beach in Brazil, where the purest blue waves gently wash an ivory coastline of sand and rocks. Or it may not. I thought I'd just come here on the off chance. It's what Jerry would have wanted.
The Butter Factor was written and performed by The Cheese Shop, who are Gerard Foster, Dave Lamb, Gordon Southern, Tim Berender, Ben Ward and Richard Webb. The producer was Maria Esposito.